Hello, it's Owen Shehan here from Off The Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves and questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.
Off the ball, GAA.
Honestly, I wouldn't have put Mark as the manager type. Now, Mark's been extremely, he's always been an extremely smart player, but in terms of that management role, I possibly would have seen him as a coach.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Hello there, you're welcome along to the Ryan line. It is Nathan and top journalist Shane Ryan. How are you, Shane?
I'm good, Nathan. Your voice is sound. I don't know what it is, but it's sounding good right now. It always sounds good. Something about it right now sounds very dulcet, even better than usual.
Wow. How was your Aronimink experience?
Yeah, it was good. It was good. Weird, kind of a weird week. We'll talk about all the golf. We were staying in downtown Philadelphia, which is, I have to say, sneaky great city. We had a really good time in Philly. The trade-off for staying down there was an hour back and forth each day to the course, but I think it was worth it. So great time off the course. On the course, always something weird happening. So it was kind of an odd tournament, but I liked it. I think I liked it in the end. So I would say, yeah, an A of a week. I give it an A.
Okay, right. Your article, your post-round Golf Digest, what they pay you the big bucks for, has been getting a lot of praise on our Discord, okay. Where you were very positive within that of you found a way to enjoy this week, a week that a lot of people came out of going, it really took flight and we didn't get a great winner at the end.
Yeah. I here's the thing. The ending is okay for me. Now, there's a difference between Aaron Rye playing out of his mind for the last 10, 11 holes and winning versus, let's say, he took a 10-stroke lead on day one and never looked back. Now, that would be bad. However, the entire final round, Rory had a chance. Rahm had a chance. So the winner almost doesn't matter. You got to see good drama. And then you got to see somebody do something that is like, he'll never do again, and nobody expected it, and represents this unbelievable stretch of pressure play. And it's kind of like Spahn at the U.S. Open last year, where they make it look easy, and I think it's like important in those moments to keep in your mind how difficult it is and how 99% of guys like that who find themselves in that position, whether on a Sunday or even a Friday or whatever, immediately come back to the field. Like, they cannot handle being in those rarefied airs, right? And so when you see Aaron Rye do what he did, I think it's awesome. I think it's like, this man may only have one chance in life to walk through the door. He may only have really that one window, and he took his chance and just like seized it like nobody else, right? I mean, he played the best golf of his life, the one chance he had to win a major. I think that's enjoyable. I think for me, it's enjoyable. I don't need Scotty or Rory to win every single time, you know? And especially in this era, we are getting superstar winners almost every time. And so when we don't, I want to see something special. And I thought that was special at the end. And before that, we got to see huge names competing. It wasn't like Rye, you know, was up, you know, starting on Saturday. He had to come earn it. But we did get to see Rahm under pressure. We did get to see Rory. Scotty, you know, was pretty far back. But there are a lot of big names there. So, and then, you know, even Justin Thomas's run to kind of put a scare in everybody was like, you know, holy shit, a guy could win while he's sitting and watching for 3 hours. An unbelievably early run. So I liked it.
Apologies to any listeners who've heard me say this earlier in the week, but I agree with some of what you're saying. I'm not as in on the Scotty was in contention, Rory was in contention, Rahm was in contention. I know they were there and it felt like they were in contention. And you're right. Looking at the leaderboard, they were. It just, they never gave us a run at any stage that I thought they were sort of on the cusp of at all times. So Rory'd have a birdie and you go, okay, he's alive. He's within two. And then nothing would really happen with Rory for an hour, hour and a half. Scotty just, he kept missing putt after putt after putt. There was no, and what I had said earlier in the week was, and this goes for all of these type of majors, is that the thing that makes it really interesting, all that good stuff that you're talking about for sort of 3.5 days, is the thing that it can't give you for the back nine then, which is the ability for somebody to go really crazy and put pressure on. I know you're going to say Aaron Wright did just that, but it didn't feel like Ram could really respond to what Rye was doing because you couldn't be that aggressive. You just had to sort of hope you drove it in a decent position, hope you hit the right spot in the green. And yeah, that was the bit. I never felt anywhere on the back nine overly excited by what was happening or a sense of, ooh, Rye is going to blow up or someone's going to come from three back.
Well, again, I just think the proof is in the pudding where it's like you said it, but Rye did it. You know what I mean? It's like it is possible. No, I understand what you're saying. The course, and I think Rory on the course setup, I thought it was a really interesting debate actually, because I thought normally I have a strong opinion, but I actually saw both sides of it. I thought Rory's best point was it is hard to make birdies, obviously, the way, especially when they were putting the pin so hard. But I thought his really interesting point was it's hard to make bogeys too, or hard, especially hard to make double bogeys. Now you can say, well, Bryson DeChambeau found a way, Max Homa found a way, but I think for the top guys, it was that, like Cam Smith watching him the final round, the man could not drive it straight, but it didn't get punished for it, right? So it's like, and that led to what we saw all week was this incredible bunching. But I mean, we did see a lot of 65s. We did see the last 2 days, especially. We saw a bunch of 65s. Aaron Rye shot a 65. He went after it. He seized it, and it's like, well, Rom could have done that too. Rory could have done that too. It wasn't impossible. It's just that it took, and with a bunch of leaderboards, somebody's going to do it, right? Inevitably, one person was going to do it, or someone like Justin Thomas. So, what was the next best score? 6 under. Yeah. So Rom and Smalley ended up at 6 under. Rom had a decent final day, shot a 68, but it did feel inevitable that somebody in this last group is going to shoot 66 or 65 and win, and one person did, right? So it's hard for me to hear that argument like, oh, they couldn't have responded. Well, it's like, yeah, they could have. One guy
Yeah,
did.
but no, but I think, I suppose, and this is part of the problem the PGA has coming as the next major after the Masters, which is just the perfect golf course for major golf because it feels like every hole you can birdie, every hole you can double bogey, and that there's a big variation on every single hole, which didn't, this felt like a course you could par your way around. And you're right, it Aaron Wright proved that you could go on these runs and you could hold putts and he hold a couple of monster putts in a way that nobody else did. From your sort of chatting to people around the place on Sunday and players and the vibe post tournament, the feeling that maybe they got it wrong, the players in terms of what they thought, Rory's the one that keeps going up of, I can just bomb it down there anywhere, it doesn't really matter, you just gouge it out, that clearly wasn't the case. Now, again, to keep contradicting, as you said, Cam Smith was able to do it. But it stopped Rory being aggressive and having birdie putts in the way he thought. Did they just underestimate the course? Did it not play the way they expected?
Yeah, it's a huge underestimation of what the course would actually ask for, which is that it's a second shot course. And so it doesn't, Rory, I think Rory was somewhat right in that it doesn't really matter what you do off the tee, or it does matter, put it this way, it does matter, but you're not going to get rewarded or killed in the same way. Where it's like he's used to playing courses, and his prejudice or his bias was that I want to play a course where when I hit a brilliant drive, my chances of making a birdie go way up. And if I hit a terrible drive, they go way down. Whereas in this case, it's like the drive is important, but it's only one part of the puzzle, and it's not the most important part of the puzzle. And obviously, with Rory's style of game, he likes courses where the driver dictates because that's when he's the most successful. That's not the case at Around a Mink. And so I think what I keep going back to is people like Rory, or people who are kind of on looking at data golf and saying it doesn't properly reward the best players, or you kept hearing things like that. It was just a different kind of test. And so what they're doing is saying there's one right kind of test. And what Aronimink was saying was the test here is an ultimate show of discipline. You can't screw up, okay? You're not always going to get rewarded. You're going to have tough putts. You're probably going to make bogeys when you play a hole really well, but you got to stay and stay and stay. And then eventually you've got to seize your moment and get hot. And I think that's an okay kind of test. I mean, it's a weird kind of test. We're not used to seeing that. The bunching was like something, nothing we've ever seen. But I thought, and in the end, and like Justin Thomas thought, and a lot of people thought, a very legitimate kind of test, and a kind of cool kind of test for, maybe you wouldn't want it every time, but I certainly appreciate it as different from most of these major venues.
And we do look at Rory and maybe Scotty in particular as almost sort of unbiased observers when they're talking about these things. As you say, they're more than happy to put a little bit of pressure on the guys organizing majors to go, if you could set up the course that suits me perfectly, that's what people really want to see. What people want to see is a competition Rory McIlroy is competing in, and the type of course setup that works for that guy, like that's really the fairest course setup, isn't it?
Well, they're working the refs too. I think there's intentionality behind that because it can change within the tournament, right? I mean, it can be different. All of a sudden, the pin setups can be easier. We saw that a little bit on Saturday, and then they just got really unlucky with the wind on Saturday afternoon, which is pretty funny. But yeah, 100%, 100%. And they're working the refs, but also they're biased toward their own kind of game, just like you said.
James C says, just finished reading Shane. Are the golf writers the most disappointed crew when an Aaron Rye wins a major?
No, I don't think the crew were that disappointed. I don't think most of us were. It became easy to write his story. All these things came out, like the iron head covers, kind of like a little symbolic memorial of his working class roots. All the stories about how nice he is and all the people saying stuff about that. There was a good story there, I think, for people. And again, just the way he played. I mean, just the way he played in the last 10 holes was a good story. So I don't think so. Like for me, it's like, what actually is it easier to write Scottie Scheffler again? Or is it more intriguing to write Scottie Scheffler again than this guy? I mean, maybe not. I think the disappointment was I just saw people on Twitter who were golf is a little weird that way, with like it's not a good tournament if a big name isn't winning.
No, and
But
again, it's that thing that the majors are the four tournaments where the sporting world comes in, and an Aaron Rye is this rank outsider who has come from nowhere to win. Yes, anyone who's watching golf on a regular basis knows that Aaron Rye has been around for a long time, has won some big tournaments, albeit, well, he has won on the PGA Tour before, but what he did to Tommy Fleetwood and Rory McIlroy in Abu Dhabi last year, like this guy is. He has been top 20 in the world. It's not
I
an
know.
insane situation that he's come from nowhere to go and do this. So, yeah, I do think part of it was the lack of the celebration, the lack of me being the underdog, the little guy, and going wild. And oh my God, I never thought I'd do this. He was just so nice and reserved and polite and did all the right thing. Jer8907, question for Shane. Halfway through the major season in mid-May, WTF?
Yeah, that's how it works.
Correct.
It's not a new schedule this year. It's not a new schedule.
Jer8907. Shane's answer is, and that is a correct point you have made there.
It's been that way for what? What is it? A decade now?
And still we kind of he is right though, and I was again maybe because it was a bit flat, and I know that you can maybe talk to us about the changes that are coming. It does. And I know moving the PGA isn't part of that. It does feel again with the sort of signature event thing and how this had to squeeze them in a way. You get everybody involved for the Masters. Like everybody's in. That's when the world tunes in. They're bought into the storyline. And actually, if you were to put the PGA back to even leave the players in March, put the PGA back to August, you could have a great 2 months there of putting in four or five signature events that are all big, and you still have your majors sort of a bit more spread out. Whereas now, yeah, it all just feels that little bit too condensed that we don't have time to fully appreciate, and guys aren't playing all the events they should play and all of that. But it's changing, I guess, is it?
Well, first of all, let me say that we're 60% of the way through the major season, so it's even worse than he thought, because the players has also happened. So we're 3/5 of the way.
Wow.
Couldn't resist. Now, the change. So I'm still catching up on all this, but basically, as Rolap said at the Players, this report came out yesterday where You're gonna have 16 elevated events. You're gonna have a bunch of secondary events. You've got all your majors. You've got your playoffs. But I don't think the PGA Championship is moving unless I've
No,
somehow
no.
missed that. Okay, so we're still gonna have the same thing where in July is your last major at the Open. I mean, I like roll-ups. I mean, if we want to talk about the schedule change, we can. I like and have liked the schedule change idea. They proposed it to the players. I think he'll be strong enough as a leader to push it through. So, yeah, I mean, the problem is like this week that we're in the Byron Nelson. That's going to be a secondary event next year. And I like that they're putting 120 people in the elevated events. I think that's way better than 72. I think it's good that they have a cut. However, it's going to make these events even worse because you're not even going to have numbers 80 through 120 going, well, I got to go play now because I couldn't play in the signature events. Everybody's going to be skipping the Cognizant or the Byron Nelson or whatever the case is, the John Deere. And so these secondary events, I mean, that was always going to be the thing, right? They're always going to be the problem, but it is an awkward time to do it when you're in the middle of this TV contract where TV's going, wait a second, we paid for this. Or the sponsors like CJ, who's sponsoring the Byron Nelson, are going, hold on a minute. So next year, I'm going to have nobody in the top 30. Now, it's not that much worse than it is now. So, like, look at this weekend. You've got Scottie Scheffler and then nobody until number 24 in the world. Now, you do have Spieth and you do have Brooks Koepka, which you just kind of like Spieth from Texas, Koepka because he has to play these events. But yeah, it's going to be rough scenes for the little events, I think.
So I assume because there'll be more pressure on them to play the new version of signature events that Scotty won't have the space in his schedule to play the Byron Nelson.
Yeah, I mean, he may still, I guess. I mean, it's, but, right. It's, I mean, when you're doing 16 of these things, plus the three playoff events, plus the majors, that's what, 23 events right there. And that it may be 24 with the players. I don't know if they're counting that as part of the 16, but it's just like they're not going to want to play that much more than that. So yeah, I think you'll see him. I mean, my guess would be unless he really feels attached to this, like they let him play in it when he was 16, so maybe there's some deep attachment there. Same with Spieth, but if not, I mean that would be an easy one to skip for sure.
The beard is on form this week. Question for Shane. With two British, in brackets, replaced with UK, GB, and Northern Ireland, whatever name keeps the Irish Karens from getting angry. Wow. With two UK and North, with two Great Britain and Northern Ireland winners of the opening two majors, is there a realistic chance of a British Grand Slam? Fitz, Rose, Penge, McIlroy, Bob, all genuine contenders?
Well, that's a great question, and it makes me want to know what is the last year without an American champion. I have it on hand here. So, oh man, you've got to go. Wow, Nathan, you got to go back. I mean, I'm at the turn of the century, and there's not been a year. We're going back to 99. You know what it was? 1994. You had Nick Price winning two events. Ernie Els won the US Open, and Ola Thabele won the Masters.
Wow.
So 33 years, you've got to go back. And before that, you probably have to go 33 more. So, yeah, that would be amazing. I mean, in a British Grand Slam probably hasn't happened since 1890 when there was only the British Open. So let's see. Yeah, you've had Rory, Northern Ireland. I mean, I wonder if you could get like the Four Nations because you have Bob McIntyre win and then Lowry and get, I mean, sorry to
You
Wales.
just, I was just going to say, you've just left out Wales. I assumed when you said
Yes.
Four Nations, you meant Wales.
Sorry to Guernsey or Jersey or whatever.
Well, I think Wales sees itself as more of a part of Britain and the United Kingdom than Guernsey or Jersey or any of these. Who is the great Welsh golfer right now? Jesus, Wales is
Yeah,
going
no,
through
there's,
a
I mean, like,
particularly.
is Jamie Donaldson still alive? Like,
Maybe Jamie Donaldson wins the senior
yeah,
US Open and through
there you
that
go.
qualifies.
Yeah,
For yes, and pulls off the greatest shock of all time.
so maybe.
It seems unlikely.
It does
Did I see you?
seem unlikely.
Did I hear you were rowing online with Lee Westwood?
Yeah, Lee called my colleague Joel a prick, and so I kind of stood up for Joel a little bit.
Man.
Yes. I don't know, man. Like one of my colleagues wrote about it on one of the colleagues who was also going after Lee Westwood wrote about it on Digest, and I don't know. I don't know if Twitter wars need to be a source of an article.
No, I just you kind of think with Westwood, and he's still fighting the fight. Like he is the guys after the war is over. It's like, but you know, he's obviously a very rich guy after the war is over. But you know, it's done. You were wrong. Okay, you made all your money. Be happy with that. But you can't still somehow be claiming that we were on the right side of history here.
And I think, whether this is going on with Lee Westwood or not, I don't know, but there is a phenomenon of people where they don't like to admit they were wrong ever. And so sometimes they double down. And sometimes when it seems like they're wrong or the whole world's against them, they double down and get angry. And, Joel had written an article basically saying, Rom hurt his legacy by going to LIV. Now he has a chance to kind of work his way back if he wins the PGA tomorrow. This is on Saturday night. And Lee Westwood, I maybe just saw the headline or maybe he read the whole thing, but he goes, "What no judgmental prick you are." And it's like, it's not judgmental. It's on the scale of judgments that are passed on LIV golfers, this was on the soft side. So people may disagree with him. I mean, I didn't agree with the whole article. I disagree that, when you do something that if it does tarnish your legacy, I disagree that, oh, you can just go win a tournament and it's fine again. You know what I mean? I think that's like not something I subscribe to, but a judgmental prick, I mean, that seemed
Well,
harsh to me.
I also like the idea of, say, Joel Beal when he's going into his job interview at Golf Digest to become a golf columnist, and they're saying, "And tell us why you should have this job." Well, the thing about me as a golf columnist, I'm very non-judgmental. I don't have an opinion. I don't have an opinion on anything. That's the great thing about me is I have no opinions.
It's like it's an opinion column, Lee. Like this is kind of what we do. But it's like it's his right to call him a prick, honestly, too. That's like here's the thing. I think this is all not I'm gonna say in good fun, but when you're going at each other, like this is the culture, right? It's like go at each other. It's good. He calls him a prick, great. I go back at Westwood, he comes back at me, all great. What ends up happening with a lot of these people, and Lee Westwood didn't do this, at least that I know of, but other people did. They start tagging like Golf Digest in it, and they're like, "Is this what you
You
expect of your
fired.
writers?" It's like, "Oh, you're trying to get me fired? Okay." Like that's not part of the game, man. Like this is like just, and it's always like, when they're losing the argument, it's like that's when that happens. So that's the only thing I'd say. It's like people do that. You're like, stop it, okay? Like we all have livelihoods. Don't you're not it's not gonna work. Don't do that. And it shows how soft they are, really. So it's all crazy. I'm just like get in there and mix it up, great. And just try to be like, this is the wrong phrase, but be a man about it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
I like the thought of you tweeting at Live Golf. Are you comfortable with one of your golfers calling a journalist a prick? They're like, yes.
Dear
Very much so.
Mohammed bin Salman, is this the sort of behavior you tolerate on your
The Beard has a coverage question. I tend to watch the majors on catch up, which sparked quite the debate on the Discord of everyone going, what?
Ooh,
I have things to do. We all have things to do.
yeah.
I have things to do. Pause the show and then catch up by fast forwarding through the ads, etc. This tournament has been particularly bad at showing anything past the first page of the leaderboard. Every now and again, they show the second page, but never a run through of the whole field. Today, Saturday, I had no idea what Cam Young-Spieth had done. Why have they stopped doing the ticker tape thing or showing all scores?
Maybe because of the internet. That's the glib answer. But no, it's a good question. I don't know. I always hated it when they did the ticker scores and you're reading like 120th place. I personally didn't like that. So I'm like, if I need to know someone's score, I'll just, go on PGAtour.com or PGAChampionship.com. So I kind of disagree with the beard on this one, but I see where he's coming from.
No shanks. Question for Shane. How about this for a solution to the ridiculously long rounds we have to endure at the majors? First, cut the field in half. Okay, well, that's one solution. Second, and more radically, the first group out is given a time to complete, say 3.5 hours. If they don't finish in that time, they're disqualified. No ifs or buts. The groups behind them must keep up. And the last few groups might get up to 4 hours, would bring an added layer of excitement to each round. The TV viewers would know in advance when the tournament ends.
Stupid idea. Next. Stupid idea.
Jer
I
Egg
mean,
907.
it's funny, but it's stupid, and he knows it's stupid. All right, we'll move on.
Question for Shane. To become a proper golfer again, Bryson needs to rejoin the PGA Tour and do the Brooks Redemption Stint, drop YouTube, and work with one of the big equipment companies and get normal clubs. He won't do any of this, will he?
Probably not. Right now he's like floating the whole like I was just on the golf channel today and they're like, what do you make of Bryson's big decision where he's got to either choose professional golf or YouTube? And I'm like, well, first of all, there's no YouTube. His YouTube is successful because of his professional golf. If he just quit professional golf, that YouTube in 5 years would not, it would not look like it does now. So if he wants to keep doing YouTube, he should keep playing professional golf. No, I think he'll probably, I think Bryson is goes in ebbs and flows. He's Rory-like in that sense, although maybe even more dramatic, where, yeah, everything seems like the end of the world sometimes, and then he'll be riding high later. And he'll, it's just a matter of his work ethic, but he's always worked hard. I just don't see that going away. So I think we'll see him back on top of the world at some point. I think he's just in the doldrums now.
Do you think Bryson thinks the horizon is the end of the world?
That what is the end of the world?
That the earth is flat and that we could fall off the edge? Because I just
Oh,
glimpsed an Instagram of Bryson talking about the moon landing,
the moon landing.
which he thinks was faked, though he did think that we landed on the moon.
Yeah, he only thinks the footage is faked, which is what quite a distinction. Yeah, that was certainly interesting. Yeah, no, flat Earth, and nothing would surprise me. I don't know. I don't know if I've
That's
ever heard
it.
anybody say that the moon landing was real, but the footage was faked. That might be a
Yeah.
new one.
It's a good point you make, actually, because on Bryson and YouTube, that Bryson's unique selling point isn't his winning personality or anything like that. It's
Right.
that of him and all the other top 20 YouTube golf creators, he's the one who has won majors. So
He's the best.
he can do the stuff the others can do, but he's actually a proper golfer. So
Right.
you lose that, what have you got? Speaking of proper golfers, Jer, question for Shane. Thoughts on Garrick Higgo, harsher on professional?
Unprofessional to be, to miss your tee time, obviously. It was funny. It was the whole thing was kind of hilarious, I thought. The whole thing of like I was on time but not on time. I was like, okay. Yeah, I mean that was it's funny. People love that story, and I get it. It was there was something about it that was so funny, and he was the funniest guy for it to happen to, right? He was just like when you see him talk, you're like, yeah, that's the guy. That's the guy that misses tee time. Then breaking up with, dumping his caddy. That's funny too. The whole thing was ridiculous. I think he must have been genuinely embarrassed though to have fired his caddy. Like that, I kind of didn't see that coming because even at the press conference, he was going, my caddy was yelling at me to go. It didn't sound like the caddy was the reason he was late.
I feel like we've all worked with someone like that or know someone like that of, oh yeah, I did that thing wrong, but it shouldn't have mattered that I didn't do the thing I yeah. But I was right there, like I knew I was probably going to be late. I was stood there. I could have walked over, but like I didn't really think it mattered. Now they're saying it did matter, but I'm telling them it shouldn't really matter because I didn't think it should have mattered. So why are you screwing me like this?
Oh, man.
Am I allowed am I yeah, I won't if you don't want me to. Am I allowed to tell the listeners about the email I received from Shane Ryan about 90 minutes ago? It was unsolicited. I didn't realize. I thought it might be a Discord. So this isn't going to ruin your. This is behind, paywall of it. So it's fine. This
Go
isn't going to go
ahead.
viral.
Go ahead.
Headline: Best place to pee on a golf course? Question mark. Folks, I appreciate you reading the email after the subject line. I'm working on a story about the best place to pee on a US golf course.
Yeah. So this is, this was crowdsourced. I actually put it on Twitter. I've gotten a bunch of good answers. Honestly, if your listeners hear this and you want to give me an Irish one or this or
Oh.
whatever, please do. Please
Well,
do.
this is going to go down really well if you come back and you're like to your editor, yeah, I've written an unbelievable piece, but also you know what? I'm not the type of guy who half measures when I'm writing an article. I've actually gone worldwide. I've gone way beyond. So I can actually tell you the best place to pee on an Irish golf course. What about Wraye's Creek?
Well, Race Creek, Biostair or whatever, tried it. So yeah, that's a good one. But here's the thing. This article will be trying to find the best place, but there will be a lot around it. So if someone comes to me and is like, this, like, I'm sending you a pic, it's actually happened already, but if other people email me and say, here's this place in Ireland that's unbelievable for this, like great view or whatever it is that makes it special, I will put that in 100%. It's not going to win, but you'll get, the mention will be
Okay.
there. So please have at it. I've probably got 100 answers already. This is going well.
Right. Great. And without stealing the thunder of the article completely, is there a rank, are there criteria? So is privacy important? Is, you're not looking for the best toilet block, I presume.
Yeah, well, it's going to be outdoors ideally, but the funny thing is I've gotten toilet ones, and people are like, the toilet at this club is unbelievable because there's a picture window and you have this great view. So like that stuff. View is obviously a huge one. Seclusion is a big one. We're not going to print anybody's who's like, I love to piss in front of this house. You know what I mean? Like, don't do that. We don't want that.
I
No,
really hit
seclusion.
the guy on the eighth fairway, so I pee outside his house every time.
No, I mean, like one person wrote to me, and I can't remember where it was, but it was like, we always go in the same spot. It's fantastic. It's in a little clearing. A couple members leave liquor there. It's so popular, so that when they go back there, they can have a
Wow.
nip. Yeah. So there's like things like that. I think it's going to be good. I don't know how I'm going to choose the best one, but there's some great candidates already. But I would love to hear from the Irish folk.
Howley Westwood could say anybody from Golf Digest is a prick when they're doing this quality of work. It's, wow, mind-blowing.
We're doing stories about pricks. Yeah, no, exactly. How dare you call me unprofessional? Have you heard my latest story?
Wowzers. Right. On that note, I look forward to reading it in the coming weeks, and maybe you can give us some updates as to the responses you're getting from the Irish crew.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Yeah, I look forward to it. Yes, give them my email, everything. Do the whole thing.
Shane Ryan, thank you as ever. We shall talk to you next Thursday on the Rhineline. Good luck.
Bye-bye.
Hello, it's Eoin Shehan here from Off the Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves, and questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run. You can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.